Psycho Savvy Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, the Bible talks about seven plagues, the seven biblical plagues of the Bible. Do you remember any of them? Fire, vermin, boils, darkness, death of the firstborn. Is God angry with the United States? Have we defied his laws in numerous ways? God told us that a man should not lie down with another man, and we have defied him. He told us not to bear false witness, and we defied him. He told us to place no other God before him, and we have defied him. And so now the wrath of God is upon us in the United States of America. Remember the plagues of the Bible? Fire, vermin, boils, darkness, death of the firstborn. Well, God sent these plagues against Egypt. But think about it. In California, there are 1,000 fires burning out of control. But still, we defy him. In Missouri, vermin ate through a levee, flooding towns. But still, we defy him. In the Midwest, there were biblical floods. In cities across America, degenerates with boils and herpes and sexually transmitted diseases writhe in pain from their illness, but they still continue their perversion. As I said, the skies in California are choked with smoke from the 1,000 fires, but still the people defy God. And today, too many women slaughter their own firstborn with abortion in the name of freedom and progress. Yeah, I think God is angry with America. Why? Because we have broken his laws, and he has only just begun to shower his wrath upon this nation. I believe our only hope is to return to the path of righteousness, to return from the land of bondage that we created for ourselves, and to return to one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. This is Michael Savage. I approve of this monologue, and I believe the seven plagues of the United States will not be stopped either with John McCain or with Obama. Sometimes it makes you wonder. Fire, yeah, well, we have fire. Vermin, we have vermin. Boils, we have boils. Darkness, we have darkness. Death of the firstborn, we have it. We have women electing to kill their firstborn. They don't even need an enemy to kill their firstborn. They're electing to put a knife into the hearts of their own firstborn and cut their hearts out. You show you how mad a society is? No, they don't even need an enemy to come in and kill their firstborn. They're lining up around the block, going to clinics to have their own firstborn killed. Now, we know God sent these plagues against Egypt, and we can't say, well, that's old-fashioned stuff for primitives who don't, you know, can't reason, those old olive growers in ancient Israel. What did they know? You know, they had to be frightened by the old ways. Well, there's an awful lot of learned, intelligent people who would say, wait a minute, let's just use logic here. Wait a minute, we have fires out of control. We have vermin out of control. We have boils out of control. Take a look at the diseases in this country. Darkness, death of the firstborn. We have it now. What do you need God to come down and sit down and have a town hall meeting on Fox News for you to understand that God speaks in interesting ways? You ever heard the song, every time I hear a newborn baby cry or touch the leaves or see the sky, then I know why I believe? Remember a song like that? Well, no one could write a song like that and get it published with the earring-wearing degenerates in the music business. Oh, no. No, no. That would only be for the Bible Belt folk, the dummies down in the, you know, the Southeast. Not the sophisticated folks who do it in the road. No, 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 no. But God doesn't talk. God doesn't talk. He doesn't speak from a mountain with tablets in his hand. God speaks to us in silent ways, without words. He speaks to us without words, and that's why I'm worried. I'm worried because I think this is only the beginning. I think this country has so turned from its founding ways as a righteous nation, turning from authoritarianism with Pelosi, with Obama on the horizon saying they're in favor of clamping down on free speech, and controlling us, where the civil servants would no longer be civil nor servants, but they would grab all the power to themselves. That's what a Pelosi, the Mussolini-like woman of the day, would want to do. That's what Obama stands for, if you read his positions and look at his policies. For all of McCain's failings, there's not a hint of authoritarianism in the man. If anything, he's too nice. That's the only problem with McCain, is he's too wishy-washy.
Savage.
We're all being tried every day. Things are very tough. So you say, well, what about, well, how are we being tried? Look at the gasoline prices. We know something's wrong with the picture. We know that there's oil under our own land. We know that there's oil offshore. We know there's oil in Alaska. We own that land. And yet, whatever the reasons, left, right, whatever you want to, you know, believe, the powers called the cartel, the oil cartel, is behind why we don't drill there. They say they want to drill there. I don't believe it for a minute. They're probably funding the anti-drilling movement and the anti-drilling opposition. Just as the when Prohibition came in, who profited the most when alcohol was prohibited? That's when the mafia boomed, because they sold alcohol. So if you were the oil cartel, what would you want? You want to make sure your supply is limited. So who would you fund? Those who are in favor of not drilling. So you'd fund liberal groups who say don't drill. You know, you understand what I'm saying to you? You think that you're seeing it? You're not seeing the curveball. You're not seeing the slide balls here. They could drill. They could drill plenty. They could build overnight. They could do it. Overnight, we could solve this energy crisis. Of course, I've said it for 2 years now. Where would I? Okay, there's a miracle. Michael Savage is now in charge. What does he do day one? He sends a message to Mexico. We're sending in the military, and we're going to pump oil out of your country. We're going to build a pipeline, but first we're going to truck it, and you're going to pay us back for the millions of illegal aliens here who've sucked our social system dry. They've been sending $15 billion a year home to your country. Good luck to them. Now we want payback. Your resource that we need is oil. We need it now. It's a national emergency, and we're taking it. That's all there is to it. Who's going to stop us? It's in our national security. We want oil for illegals. That was in liberalism as a mental disorder. Now, what is my latest proposal? We liberated these ingrates called Iraqis. 24 million ingrates are liberated. We've spent, what, $1 trillion? Nobody really knows. How many men are dead? How many are mutilated for life? How many families are destroyed from this liberation? Quite a few, countless, 20, 30, 40,000 more. I don't know how many families have been affected by the war. How about the Iraqis? Okay, how do we get paid back? How do we, the people, get paid back? What does Iraq have that we need? Does Iraq have anything we need? Sure. Well, is it sand? No, we don't need the sand. Do we need their heat? No, we don't need their heat. Do we need their hummus? No. Where do we need their camels? No. What do we need? We need their oil. Where's the oil? They're sitting on one of the largest oil reserves in the world, in Iraq. And it could be pumped right now. Pumped and transported right to the United States of America. Oil for war? No. War for oil? No. How about paying us back for what we gave them? That's number two. I'd start that the next day. So I don't need to listen to this cretin Obama or this old man McCain. What do you think? I need them for ideas? They're not Winston Churchill. If there was a Winston Churchill, I'd be in the audience cheering the man. I'd have tears in my eyes that we finally had some salvation, some brains. I don't see any brains out there. It's all the same rubbish, the same kind of rubbish that people on television keep replaying over and over again for morons. I just gave you more wisdom than you heard in the whole campaign. More concrete wisdom for our energy crisis than you heard in the entire campaign. You don't read about it anywhere, do you? But my loyal listeners who tune in get this from me every day. This is my fate right now, is to be in front of a microphone and do it on the natch. Stumble if need be. Walk around like with impediments if need be. Stutter if need be. Play the fool if need be. But slowly but surely, maybe the people will awaken to the fact that we're being lied to. We're being deceived. We're being set up and sold out. There's a border crisis? Sure, there's a border crisis. The federal government wants the border crisis. What's the U.S. military for? What's the National Guard for? The National Guard's to go to Iraq? To liberate Shia from Sunni and Sunni from Shia? That's what the National Guard was created for? Put that before the Supreme Court. The National Guard was created for work here, not there. They were never intended to be sent overseas. This is a giant game because Bush didn't have the political horsepower to get an active war and do a regular call-up. So he took these poor guys and he started sending them over to Iraq where they were never, ever supposed to go, ever. The entire National Guard should be used on our border with Mexico. That's where the crisis, that's how the crisis can be solved, with our National Guard on our borders. Nothing in, nothing out. Nothing in, nothing out, unless it goes through our National Guard. You want to see a border crisis averted? You want to see a sovereignty reasserted? Use the National Guard here, not there. I'll be right back.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Teddy is, I got to mate him. I've got to breed him, rather. I've got to get him a girl. He's still young, but I want his puppy. I want to have the puppies. I want to give a few away and keep two. I've decided that I'll put up with the mess in the house. I want to see his offspring. What a proud papa he would be. What a show door. I don't want his DNA to disappear. That's the point. You know, once in a while I run into people who are single people, men I know, who are like older guys, over 50, and they're not married. And I say, why wouldn't you be married and have children with such great brains and DNA? Why do you want it to disappear from the gene pool? One friend of mine got married because of it. The other one has gone as far as Athens looking for a wife on a cruise. But they're looking to pass their gene pool on. Look at the people having babies. Have you seen recently? Have you taken a look recently what's going on in this country? Who's having them? Go to a mall. You'll take a look at who's going to run America in the future. There they are with the pants hanging under their butts. And I've said the same thing to gay men, by the way, that I've met who are reasonable. I said, don't you understand what this gay lifestyle has done to you? I mean, I've had rational discussions, no anger, no hatred, where I said, don't you understand that guys like you who are creative, intelligent, and kind are natural fathers? You should be having babies with a woman. That's what you should be doing so that your genetics are passed on in the society. I don't know if it's reached anybody, but I think that if I were in charge of any kind of information in this country, that's the message I would send out to gay communities, which is you're all great, wonderful people. What do you think? You're the first people in the world to have had impulses in that direction? You control them. Or else we'll wind up like Satyricon. Watch Fellini's Satyricon. That's what ancient Rome was all about, where everyone gave into their impulses. They lived only for their impulses. They became a poor sign, degenerate as a result of giving into their every impulse. Died young as poor sign degenerates. That's the country we are fast descending into. Ben, New York City, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, hello, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to comment on your Satyricon remark.
Yes.
Okay. I just think that you can draw a better parallel. I think that, in other words, that was not all of the Roman Empire or even the Roman Republic. That was really somewhat like taking a camera crew to Hugh Hefner's Playboy Mansion and saying that was America and the American Republic.
Okay.
It's a little narrow. I would rather say that the lifestyle portrayed in the Satyricon and that sort of a view that we do have of those times and places is really much... much like the elites that we suffer under in America today. The Satyricon showed the degeneracy of the elites.
Yeah, but hold on. But since the elite determined the course of Rome, it's very much apt that we saw a snapshot of their degenerate porcine physiques, because that really was the reason Rome, the main reason Rome collapsed was foreign wars that were unsustainable, for example. I know that's a raw nerve right now. And, of course, cultural degeneracy. There's certainly both elements played a role in the collapse of Rome. But, you know, I read something that's even more intriguing. Do you know how the elite received their water in ancient Rome, how they got their drinking water into their homes?
Aqueducts.
through lead pipes. The pipes were all made of lead. And it has been posited by a scientist, and this was written 25 years ago, I forget who wrote it first, that lead was therefore leaching into the brains of ancient Romans. And as you well know, lead is toxic. And they lost their ability to reason, to be rational as a result of lead in the water pipes. And I thought that was a very, very intriguing story. You ever hear that one?
Indeed, quite correct. But once again, I just...
Well, I want to make a jump now. I then took that story when I wrote Reducing the Risks of Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's and showed how aluminum is ubiquitous in our society today, whether it be in antacids, whether it be in foods, whether it be in cookware, and how aluminum, which is highly neurotoxic, in fact, extremely neurotoxic, has leached into the brains of Americans and Westerners in general, and that may be an implicated factor in Alzheimer's disease and what you could do about it. Now, that theory has never been disproven, by the way. Mm-hmm. So please go on.
Well, I don't know how much you want me to go on, but I just feel that we should narrow in on these examples, these metaphors, and really just...
Oh, what is it? You're arguing that Fellini Satyricon, which was a snapshot of the elite degeneracy, okay, the fat guys, they were having boys instead of women, that kind of thing, is not really responsible for the fall of Rome?
No, not that at all. I'm simply saying that it tends to give a sort of a narrow, distorted view of the world of that time. There were many sober citizens. There were many.
Yeah, but what good was it? We're sober. We're the sober citizens of the decline and fall of America. What good does it do when every day you wake up and the ACLU vermin are trying to debase and to destroy a God, country, motherhood, family? What good does it do when the radical left is undermining the greatest military the world has ever seen by court-martialing them, debasing them, inventing stories about them? What good does it do when you have a slob like Jack Murtha, a former Marine himself who'll turn on the Marine Corps in order to move his own career ahead? So the point is, it is the elites and the snapshot of them that's important. And by the way, I give you snapshots of the elites on this show every day in many ways. I agree with you. This is not the whole of America that I talk about. I give you snapshots of what the evil ones are doing.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I have a medical professional on by the name of Dr. Peter Breggin. And Dr. Breggin is one of my favorite guests. I haven't had him on in years. Years ago, Dr. Breggin, who was a psychiatrist, was on this program warning America about the dangers of the overdiagnosis of ADD and ADHD, and particularly the drugging of our children with Ritalin today. So, Dr. Breggin, do you know much about this new epidemic or newly diagnosed number of people with autism?
Oh, I think it's a continuing marketing effort. The drug companies have really saturated America with drugs, and so they are constantly pushing to expand the diagnoses. They have tried everything from advocating drugging of subclinical conditions, that is, conditions that don't even meet the regular clinician's eye, to using all of the adult drugs with children, which is a disaster, and spreading it to so-called bipolar disorder or manic depressive disorder in children, which I have never seen except when it's caused by psychiatric drugs. And finally, this broadening of the concept of autism to autism spectrum disorders. Almost all the experts, Michael, who are involved in this spreading of the diagnostic categories are in the pay of the drug companies.
Unbelievable how right I was. You know, it's been very hard these past few days for being attacked for telling the truth. Well, we had an expert on yesterday, Dr. Camerata, who is an autism expert and treats it. And he actually said that about 58% of the cases are falsely or misdiagnosed Even he admits that. You go a step further. What percent would you say are not autistic?
Well, I think the diagnoses do more harm than good in general. I avoid diagnosing children with psychiatric disorders because it labels them, puts them into boxes, encourages the use of psychiatric drugs. I try to understand what is happening in the child's life. And a lot of children who are labeled autistic are simply greatly in need of socialization, of a lot more attention from parents, from teachers, from counselors. So as far as I'm concerned, it's not a good idea to go around diagnosing kids. It's never a good idea to go about drugging them. Now, we do, of course, have the reality of children who, at an early age, fail to relate in a normal fashion to their moms and dads and the people around them. Most of these children, if you look at them and watch their behaving, they actually don't relate to people as if they're people.
Let's go back. Now, first of all, Dr. Bregan, you're a psychiatrist. I want the audience to know your background. Isn't that correct?
Psychiatrist. I went to Harvard College. Some of my training was at the Harvard Psychiatric Residency Program, and then I spent 2 years after I finished my full psychiatric training, 2 years at the National Institute of Mental Health. I've published about 20 books now, Michael, about 10 since you've known me, and 30, 40, I've lost count, scientific articles. So I'm right in the middle.
You're one of my heroes because you dare speak out against the guilds that are so awfully powerful. 2 weeks ago, Dr. Bregan, I could not believe what I saw. The so-called American Academy of Pediatrics had the audacity to come out and say that children as young as 2 years of age should be given adult anti-cholesterol drugs without a single scientific study having been done on the possible negative effects of such drugs on the child's liver, muscles, etc.
Right.
You know and I know it's because they were paid by the drug companies to do this, directly or indirectly through grants. Would you agree with that statement I just made?
Yes. What you find with the so-called experts in these areas, if it has anything to do with drugs, you'll find that all of them, virtually all, Michael, are involved with the drug companies, getting research money. Some of them have paid professorships by the drug companies, or they're working in buildings on the medical school built by the drug companies, or they're doing seminars and consultantships for the drug companies, or they're publishing papers written by the drug companies. We've just had a scandal about a guy named Biederman at Harvard who did more than any other person to try to justify drugging children in America, and it turns out he's been hiding just how deep his connections are. In fact, I blew the whistle on him in my new book, Medication Madness, and now the whistling is even louder since the book's been published a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, he should go to prison as far as I'm concerned. Anyone who treats children this way, or mistreats them rather, under the guise of being their protectors, are masters of deceit who should be put in prison on the autism situation. You agree that true autism exists, correct or incorrect?
There's no doubt that there is a picture that develops in some children that they have a terrible time relating to other human beings, and it can be very lasting, especially if it isn't handled properly. And the way to handle it, almost all the genuine autism advocates talk about, is with psychosocial and educational means of nurturing and encouraging the child's capacity to learn and to relate to other kids. But it's not proven biological.
Isn't it true by what I've read of Albert Einstein that when he was a very young child, he was a silent child? He stared off into space. He wouldn't talk to the teacher. And in fact, the teacher would yell at him. I read this, and I don't know if it's corroborated, that they shook him to get him to talk because he was considered somewhat off base. By today's definition, wouldn't Einstein have been declared autistic?
He would have certainly been put in the spectrum disorder, not autistic probably, but in the spectrum disorder. Absolutely. He was very slow. He was not socially very skilled, and it was very noticeable when he was young.
Is it true that they've developed pharmaceuticals to give to these poor children today that don't really work?
They have now approved the most deadly of all drugs in the psychiatric arsenal, to give to autistic kids who are, quote, very irritable.
And what drug is that?
Risperdal, which is an antipsychotic drug developed on the basis of subduing state mental hospital patients.
Oh, my God, no!
Yes, the worst of the drugs. Michael, in my work, I do a lot of medical legal work. I do a lot of consultations with injured patients. I've already seen, this happened in October of 06. Even before that, I had seen two or three dozen children with permanent neurological diseases caused by Risperdal, in particular a disease called tardive dyskinesia, which is a deterioration in the motor control and to some extent the mental centers of the brain that produces abnormal twitches, blinking, spasms, can affect the way the child walks, stands, sits, and very can be very deforming. And you can just imagine what that does to a child socially.
Oh, my God.
These are very deadly drugs. In fact, the drug company that makes a very similar drug, Zyprexa, which is Eli Lilly, has now settled for over $1 billion cases just of diabetes caused by this type of drug. And yet I'm just reading the National Institute of Mental Health, which really should be the National Institute of Medical Child Abuse at this point in time.
Mm.
It didn't used to be like this. When I was there for 2 years as a full-time consultant, it was not like this. They have a handout where they go against all sanity in autism research and treatment, and they talk about using drugs like Risperdal for behavior problems in children.
Now, if you go on Google and you do a search on Risperdal, listen to the side ads. Help for mood swings? Do you have bipolar? Do you have bipolar? And these are medical groups, hospitals, psychiatric groups, trying to invite people to come in to be diagnosed bipolar or whatever they want to be called. Is this not a business today, Dr. Breggin?
Well, it's a horrible, it's an unethical business. When I was in medical school, my psychiatric training, my entire four-year period post-medical school, 3.5 of which was in psychiatry, I saw 2 or 3 manic patients, people who were so out of control that you'd say, that's what we now call bipolar. Now every doctor has 10 or 15 or 20 in his practice if he's got a big practice, and it's all being caused, almost all, by the SSRI antidepressants, which commonly drive people into mania. So it's a business that actually supports itself. First you give the child Ritalin, then the child can't sleep, so you give him a sedative, then the child gets the sad from this combination of drugs, and you give him an antidepressant, and that drives him into mania, and you tell the parents he's got bipolar disorder, and so help me God, Michael, I see this again and again in my practice.
I think you would agree that common sense has gone out of the American social community. But Dr. Breggin, I want to again put out your website, breggin.com, B-R-E-G-G-I-N. Dr. Breggin, any last words on the Savage Nation?
I think that you do need to be defended. You are pointing out a crisis in America with the diagnosing and drugging of our children. And I wish the people who are attacking you would instead defend their children from psychiatric child abuse. And that's what I believe, in essence, you were trying to say.
Dr. Breggin, you're one of my heroes. You have been for years. I'm so glad you're with us today on the Savage Nation.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
The reason I don't go to a house of worship is I like fire and brimstone. Instead, I get Mr. Rogers and Mr. Pieper. So I stopped going a long time ago, whether it was a church where they got more concerned with sending canned goods to Nicaragua or a synagogue where I had rabbis trying to do Woody Allen imitations and made the whole thing about bagels and lox. I stopped going. So I like fire and brimstone. So if I want fire and brimstone, when I need a dose of religion, I go back to the source itself, which is the Bible. And it's not really a pleasant book to read. It's really not a very forgiving book, because the Lord is not a forgiving God. God himself is not really forgiving. Now, Jesus in the Christian Bible, the Christian people will tell you that Jesus is forgiving, and that may be so. But if you read the so-called Old Testament, which is the Bible itself, it is a book of fire and brimstone. It is the book that the fundamentalists still read. At least that's when the churches were full, and the churches that are full are the churches where the preacher pounds the podium, and he reads Isaiah 27, and it's relevant to today's news. He says, "Behold, the name of the Lord cometh from far, with his anger burning and in the thick uplifting of smoke. His lips are full of indignation, and his tongue is as a devouring fire." Now, what's interesting to me is they're talking about God. They use the word anger, burning, indignation. His tongue is like a devouring fire. His breath is as an overflowing stream. And why? He wants to sift the nations with the sieve of destruction. You hear that one? God is going to sift the nations with the sieve of destruction. He didn't want all nations to survive then, and he probably doesn't want all nations to survive now. Now, you may say it's not Christian for the innocent to die. I would suggest you read the Old Testament and see what the Bible has to say about innocent dying in warfare. There was no distinction between the guilty and the innocent. Once the dervish of war began, it was kill or be killed. Once the dervish of war began, there was no religion, there was only survival. And my friend, I am afraid that the psychotics who hold up their holy book and say that God wants them to kill you, and they can prove it right here and right now, and here's a passage which says it, or you can go on my website on michaelsavage.com and take a look at these filthy little men with dirty little beards who have held hostage the entire world of Islam, setting it back beyond even the 9th century to the 7th century. Because as I've shown you through a historical arc, I've traced the arc of the Muslim rise from the 7th century onwards, and I have told you that by the 9th century, the fanaticism of the 7th century was already lessened, and there was integration between the peoples, the Muslim peoples and the others. They got along. They worked together. These throwbacks are trying to take Islam back even further than the 9th century. They're taking Islam back to the beginnings, to the 7th century. Think about what I'm saying to you. If you're a Muslim, you better pay careful attention. You probably don't even know yourself that these little filthy men with dirty beards do not represent Islam at all. They represent a fanatical form of Islam that even Islam itself fled from in order to develop, in order for the people to prosper and to benefit. And how they have adherents and followers in this country is astounding to me. But then again, when you look at the immigration policies of Bill Clinton, and you look at what Doris Meissner, the then INS commissioner, did with her asylum and reaching out to the Arab Muslim world, bringing in 16 people from one family at a time, putting the whole family on welfare, for example, and then them bringing in more relatives, bringing in women wearing black tents over their bodies with only eye slits showing. You understand why we are in the pickle we are in. It all comes back to an immigration policy that was broken by Bill Clinton and further destroyed by George Bush. An immigration policy itself, this immigration policy, the problem with the Mexican border is only the tip of the iceberg. It started long before the border with Mexico. The Mexicans aren't the problem. The Mexicans aren't preaching that they want to overthrow America. There are some amongst them, we understand, they'll never get anywhere because, by and large, most of the Mexican workers want the very same thing that everybody else wants. They work hard, most of them. They save their money. They go to church. They raise their children. And they want to buy a house in advance in this society, and they do. You never hear them preaching hatred for America, except amongst the Aztlan and those. No, they're not our problem. The problem is the hundreds of thousands of immigrants that were let in under asylum claims from the Middle East. There's your problem. You don't have to look any further than Detroit and some other areas. The FBI knows that. The question is, how well do they know it, and what are they doing about it?
Savage.
You know, I realize the beauty of radio. Here's the beauty of radio. Here is why it's the entertainer's dream. This is the greatest medium for a great entertainer who is shy. Now, listen to what I just said to you. No one's ever said this in the history of entertainment, ever. This is brand new stuff. I've gone down into a whole new realm of reality here. I have an entertainer's personality. I have since I'm a child. I controlled it. I worked with it. Highly educated, blah, blah, blah. But fundamentally, I've always enjoyed entertaining people for many different reasons, and I won't go into it right now. However, live performances are extremely demanding. You ask anyone who does them what it takes out of people. They come off drained, and it really wrecks them in some ways. Yeah, you get the energy of the crowd. But getting up in front of people is really amazing. So now, listen to where I'm going. Let's say the numbers say that I have 8 to 10 million listeners a week. It's probably closer to 20 million on and off. But let's take the actual numbers of 8 to 10 million. That means that any 15-minute spread, there's 800,000 people listening to the show somewhere on the 300 or so stations that this radio show, The Savage Nation, has heard. 800,000 or so people every 15 minutes come in and out of the tent, so to speak. Now, can you imagine getting up in front of an audience of 800,000 people and trying to perform as naturally as I do? It's impossible. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the beauty of electronic performance, whether it be, it has to be radio. Because television actually gives you that feeling of the millions, the tens of millions of people, which is why so many of them are so homogenized, pasteurized, sanitized, pressurized, etc. And it's why many of us don't listen to the news anymore, because we know they're doing it because they've been homogenized. Rather, they're doing a homogenized newscast that offends as few people as possible. Consequently, it's not worth listening to. Why listen to something that isn't truthful? Radio, on the other hand, is an intimate medium because the broadcaster, the performer in this case, is fundamentally in his own mind, in his own world, in his own room, in his own studio. So he doesn't even understand who he is reaching. He has no concept that he's talking to millions of people. He actually thinks he's talking to a couple of people, a small audience. Therefore, it's like an intimate performance inside a small nightclub. At its best, that's what radio ought to be. And that's what I do, is I project into a small audience in a small nightclub, which is why it seems so personal to you. Do you understand the difference between this show and some others? And I'm not knocking other shows directly, just indirectly.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Shall I tell you the story of Love by the Sewer Plant? In order to do that, I have to set this up. Play the Shabub Shabub song, I Only Have Eyes For You. I want to go back in time now. And I hope that the girl involved is not listening. I pray to God.
I can't see anyone but
you. We're talking Springland, New York. Not Springland. We're talking, I don't know the town anymore. We're talking Route 42. We're talking 56, 57. We're talking a sewer plant. We're talking about Love by the Sewer Plant. First Love by the Sewer Plant. Now, this girl was so beautiful that it was like summer stock. Turn that on. They can't listen to me in the music. They got the mood already. We said it. In other words, this is a small hotel, like, you know, nothing fancy. The owner was a former boxer, a pugilist. He was the one where I told you that Jackie, who worked at the hotel, got thrown in the pool. I don't remember the name of the hotel, but he was a tough guy, this guy, genuinely tough guy. And that if he got into an argument with anyone who worked for me, beat them up and threw them off the property, that type. Everyone was terrified of him. Old school, New York Jewish kind of street fighter type. So he ruled this little hotel that he had, like with an iron thumb, an iron whatever, iron boot. He was a tough guy, and things ran right. Nothing ever went wrong. No one robbed cutlery. No one talked back. So anyway, I'm a kid. There's a kid there, and boom, it's loved by the sewer plant across down the thing in the river by the Neversink River. The water was so cold that when you waded across it, your feet turned blue. I'll tell Love by the Sewer Plant, but starting with the Shabup Shabup again. Now I got time to tell it. Again, they can't find it.
My love must be a kind of blind.
This is unbelievable. I lost my desire to talk already.
I can't see anyone but
on the uptake, they're not. I got a migraine. Just clicked in. All right side of the head is out. They don't understand this. How could the audience follow my brain? I got to make them follow. How? Explain to them. All right. Okay, turn it off now. It's 56-57, Plymouth Fury, 59-59. My uncle had a Plymouth Fury, I think. I'm not sure. Somewhere around then. Outside one of the hotels in the Catskill Mountains. I'm still young, 15. I don't know how old I was, something like that. So, fall in love, first love by the sewer plant. Here's how it is. This girl was so stunningly gorgeous, like just really beautiful, that the theater companies would come through. They had like an entertainment in these hotels, like they call it a casino. At night they'd have entertainment. Sometimes they'd have a comedian who was terrible, a juggler, a balloon man, who then eventually the father of the guy who went on XM or Sirius. His father was a balloon man, allegedly, who went around making pornographic images with balloons, as the son does verbally. Things like that. In other words, schlocky entertainment. So, nevertheless, they thought they were artists. You got to understand that. Even though they were schlocky entertainment, let's say they could paint velvet paintings, they're still a painter. In their mind, they're Van Gogh. They were theatrical, and everyone else was bourgeois, you know. The other people ate the borscht, and they ate the shav. In other words, they were the artistes, so they understood. So, in other words, some of these entertainers came around, and they looked at this girl, and they came running up. I was holding her hand and walking with her. We were kids, and they said, Manny, I wanted you to see this girl. This is the girl I was telling you about. And they like looked at her like she was a specimen of, you know, like biblical beauty. So to make a long story short, it's just young love by the sewer plant. And what I meant was, where are you going to go when you're a kid? You got nowhere to go. So we took a walk down the hill, down the hill, down the hill, down the hill, down the hill. Jack and Jill went down the hill. And it was a long slope down to the Neversink River. And there was a sewer treatment plant, which occasionally, as you well know, with sewer treatment plants, they're not exactly, they don't smell that good. But kids don't care. They can override anything, particularly when the lust hits them. So the two kids walk down the hill. They cross the river, and their feet, they roll up the dungarees, take off the shoes. The legs are blue. And they have a little moment of passion together. And it was his first moment of passion. It was not exactly on the level of a complete moment of passion, but for him, it was the first of that type. So now the kid is starstruck. Walked like stars in his eyes after that. There were not enough stars in the sky that night in the black sky and the billions of stars to equal the passion that he had for the world, where he thought he could literally reach out, grab a star, and fly away. That's how phenomenal he felt as a youngster. But then, of course, as you well know, nothing like that lasts. So what I'm getting at with the story is that it was by a sewer plant and there's nothing more to it. And boom, and now play some John Coltrane, because there's no more to the story that I care to tell. Because if I do, it'll become a pantomime. And I don't want to embarrass myself with a pantomime of something that was quite beautiful. So why don't you play some John Coltrane so they'll understand why it ended that way. It just ends abruptly. Good jazz ends abruptly.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening
to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Normally, I don't usually take a long vacation in there. I take a week. But, you know, this year I am so – I'm thinking of just – I don't know where to go, though. I maybe Fiji again. Tavayuni, I'm thinking of going back because I was there from 69 off and on for many, many years collecting plants long before Fiji became a real tourist destination. I was there when it was still a colony. God, I'm getting old. I can't believe it. I got off the ship, the Oriana, in June of 1969, I think, or July, September of 1969. And the Fiji was still a colony. I can't believe it. It was the last year of being a British colony. What year is this? It's like, what is going on, Ichabod Crane? My God. That's like a lifetime, you know? By cracky, I'm like Methuselah here on the radio. I don't know if I want to go back because I think that there won't even be a country I'll recognize at all down there. And it's, you know, it's a big tourist destination now. It's like a Hawaii, like a would-be Hawaii. They take brave, bold, muscular men who should be hunting and have them serve drinks to weaklings from America and Australia. There's something that nauseates me about that, to see muscular Fijian men with a flower in their hair serving a drink to a weakling from Australia or America, sitting with a pasty body by the pool. Something about it in me rebels against it. I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm a Westerner. I understand. I'm not a big muscular guy. But I don't know. There's something in me. There's still a part of me that doesn't like it. When they say, you know, Nisan Bula, and the guy crouches down to give some warthog a Mai Tai. There's something wrong with that picture. It's like white mischief to me. Oh, boy, oh, boy. That's the problem with having a kaleidoscopic mind. That's the problem. It's also the problem with being a logical mind. See, the problem with Western civilization is this, is that when you have reason, there's always a counterpoint to your reason. So people who don't have reason will always win. And that's why we're losing, because the radical Islamists don't have reason. They say, this is the way. Anyone who disagrees with it is an infidel. You're going to die. We say, won't you reason with us? They don't even know what you're talking about because there's no reason in their thought structure. And that's why we're going to lose unless we become more unreasonable than them. Iran is the nest, is the spider's nest behind it all. Everybody knows that. But it won't happen. I'm only a talk show host, so it doesn't matter anyway. So that's why I say it's time to go away. Some days I get up. You know what I want to do? I want to leave radio, disappear, change my name, move to an island somewhere, and never be heard from again. Turn off the radio, turn off the television, and never, ever look at the news and say, well, you know, when I'm an old man, if someone comes here with a headscarf and a scimitar, I'll know that we lost. And when I'm a very old man, if someone doesn't come here with a headscarf and a scimitar, I'll know that we won. Until that time, leave me alone. I'd rather drink Yangona, you know, and beer, and that's the end of the story. Go out like Robinson Crusoe. Not worry about going to a dermatologist every time I get a scab on my head. I never heard of anything like the society I live in. Oh, look at that. I was in the sun. I got a scab. They cut you open on the head because you got a little scab. Everything you're supposed to go to the doctor for. There's a lot to be said for just getting old and dying, you know, also. I could see why a lot of the old timers went out that way. They did. They didn't like the whole scene. You're going to get butchered in the end. All they do is cut you up and leave you like a hamburger and take out a couple of hundred grand from your family, from the 20% that your insurance doesn't cover. I went to the doctor the other day. He says to me, what kind of country do we live in that Russians come here? They have to only wait 5 years. He said they get gold-plated medical treatment, unlike anything Uncle Joe Stalin promised them in Russia. He said, while union workers in this country, average workers in this country, can't get their teeth fixed, can't get a prescription drug filled. He said, what kind of country do we live in? I won't tell you the doctor's name, but he's an American. I said, welcome to America where the streets are paved with yolds. KNEW, San Francisco, Anthony, next topic, please.
Cook Islands. That's where you want to go.
I was in the Cook Islands. I was in Palmyra. I was in the Cook Islands. So how long has it been since you've been there?
I go there. I try to go there every year.
Where do you go? What part of the Cooks do you go to?
I go to Aitutaki. Atu is where my wife's from. There's only about 400 people on that island. And Tonga.
Have you ever been to Palmyra?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. Well, look, they're pretty remote, those islands. People don't even know what remote is until they've set foot in one of those atolls. where there's an entire community of individuals who have been living there since God created the earth. It's hard to imagine what it's like. Even though they're westernized to a certain extent, you can still get the vibe off the ancient, can't you?
Yeah. Oh, the caves there in Attu, it's incredible there. I would suggest revisiting that place again because it hasn't changed much.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Rarotonga, when I first went there, what's the dance that they do where the women shake their bodies and they go? What's that called?
Asian. My wife's an actual dancer, too.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? An amazing culture. So where did you meet your wife?
I met her here in Marin County, unfortunately.
I'm sorry. That's funny. What, she came as a dancer and you stole her heart?
No, it's a longer story than that. I'm sure you don't have time for it all. But we hooked up in a great way, and I just couldn't let her go. And
isn't that beautiful? That's a beautiful story. So do you have children yet?
Yeah, I have one named Rakanui and another one Giovanni. I just had another second son.
And where are you raising the children, Anthony?
I'm doing my best to raise them in Marin County. I've been here my whole life. I went through all the Democratic stuff. My father's very politically active here. He was a Marin County supervisor for 25 years and made a lot of big changes for the right reasons here. But I'll tell you, man, it's hard to survive over here with all these bumper stickers.
It's frightening. No, the county has been completely mentally polluted by Barbara Boxer. She has warped the mind of Marin County. This used to be a Republican-conservative stronghold, this county across the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. But since she came out, she spread the virus of liberalism, and it's now metastasized.
You know, there was a time where...
Well, wait, hold on a minute. But raising the children, this is a very important question, Anthony. Let me go into it with you because it applies to all people who love America, across America, young people who are having children who are bewildered. You can raise a child the right way, even in a liberal community. And you don't have to become fanatically religious to do so either. There is a way to do it. You know, you can survive, you can swim with these comedians and still turn out a child of substance.
And I plan on raising them the right way.
Well, look, let me explain two things from my point of view, and I'm certainly you're a strong man, obviously, who's going to do it your way. If you teach your children the culture of your own culture, it's probably a European-American heritage, I would assume, and then the culture of your wife of Pacific Islander, and you teach them the essence of what that means, borders, language, and culture, and how those people survive for thousands of years on their own, with their own language, with their own culture, with their own borders, meaning the borders of their island, and how that applies to America, your child will find his way or her way in this country at the end of the day.
One of the reasons that we make sure we all go back there, so they're linked to that culture as well. I think it's important.
You're a lucky man. Obviously, you have a strength of mind, and that's why your children will turn out fine. Now, you're going to send them away to Redwood High School?
Well, I went to Drake, so, you know, they'll probably end up at Drake.
Guess what? You can send your child to a very liberal school where drugs are rampant, and they could come out without having used drugs and still have a spine. It can be done. You mustn't let the liberal virus drive the good people out. You mustn't. You must try to save your own child, and by doing so, you may save the school and the county. Thanks for the call. I don't think I'm going to go to the Cook Islands. Do we have any Cook Island music? That is such great music. When I first heard it in 1970 in the islands, it was like with the drums. They use sticks on wood. God, I'd love to dig some of that music up. I have some old tapes that are so great. I got to dig them out of the archives. Anybody have Cook Island music they could play in the background, or Tahitian, the old Tahitian music? What am I talking about? You don't even know what I'm talking about. Hey, I don't have to do politics. I could just do radio. I can tell you stories. You want me to tell stories about the South Pacific, plant collecting circa 1969 through X? Why, I can remember. I've been through hurricanes, tornadoes, and typhoons. I was on a ship between Tahiti and Fiji in a Force 10 storm. We thought that steel ship would go down, but by cracky, she didn't. It's 100% true. Did I tell you about the German captain on that ship? I was simply a lecturer. For a long while, you see, I got free passage on cruise ships as a lecturer because I had been an anthropologist. I had some good slides. Color slides, lantern slides. Sounds like Charles Darwin. No one uses them anymore. I mean, taken with the old Nikon F with an actual light meter. Some of the most beautiful pictures I've ever seen I took. I mean, of the islands. because I really knew lighting and I had a great camera, the old Nikon F with the light meter. And so anyway, the long and short of it is, so I talked my way into various cruise lines, and they would offer us a free first-class passage, and then I'd get a cabin for the children. Now, they were very young, and I'd have to take them out of school, but I believed that the children would learn more than they would sitting in a school on a wooden chair listening to a stuffy lecture about the wonders of hedonism.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Crack dealers are shielded by San Francisco city officials. I don't know how much it's going to take till you realize that the city of San Francisco is not compassionate, that the city transsexuals or metrosexuals, shall I say, who run this city are not doing it out of compassion. They are doing it to shield crack dealers. They're hiding them from federal immigration officials, even though it's illegal to do so, and they should go to jail. The head of the youth authority should be in prison. The DA should be in prison. Anyone up and down the chain should be in prison who knew this. I don't understand why the federal government does not move on the city. We need federal intervention here. The city's out of control. We have a homicide epidemic. We have a crime wave. And now we have city officials hiding crack dealers in facilities that cost $7,000 a month, paid for by taxpayers. Starbucks closing 600 stores in the U.S. Unbelievable to me. We're actually in a, I don't know, it's like a shadow depression. I would call it, good, steal that. Yeah, steal that now. Put it on your blog. Write your article for NRO. Shadow depression, Michael Savage calls it. Steal this phrase like you did compassionate conservative. Steal a phrase like you did so many other things and make believe I don't exist. It doesn't matter to me at a certain point. I'm not resentful at all. I am like Lao Tzu. It doesn't matter who gets credit for my ideas. It doesn't matter at all, as long as you listen to the show and you know where they originate. I am like the guy who throws the pebble in the pond, and then the ripples go out across America.
Savage.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, the Force 10 storm. That's right. Let me tell you, it's a true story, because this was one of the most frightening moments of my life, because my family was on the ship. I started to tell you the story. So as I was saying, when I was a younger guy, because I had been in the islands as an anthropologist, ethnobotanist, and I had great slides taken with my Nikon F with the light meter days. I mean, those were the days of real photography. I'm not saying you can't do it with digital. You can, because I have a digital camera, which I'm very fond of. I really don't know how to compare the two, because I'm very happy with the digital pictures in some way. But the day of holding the light meter and stepping back, and that was another story with the clicking the lenses on the Nikon F, which you got out of Hong Kong at a discount through a friend. I mean, there were exciting days of taking pictures, and you took slides in those days. Slides, like, hello, lantern slides, as I said, Charles Darwin. You know, does anyone do slides anymore? I don't think so. I don't think anyone does a slide. But the quality of the depth of the picture was phenomenal. I have some pictures, for example, of kids, and these were mixed-race kids, incidentally, in the Cook Islands in the circa 1970 or 71. Laughing on a roadside as I went by and started to talk to them right after a light rainstorm. So anyway, because I had great slides, I went to the cruise lines because I was always in love with big ships. I remember when I was a kid in New York, because I was landlocked and grew up in a family who didn't know from boating from a locks. I used to drive on the West Side Highway when I first got my car in New York, if you know what the West Side Highway is, and the great cruise ships of the world would line up on the Hudson River piers, and I would drive by. They were the most beautiful visions I had ever seen. Each ship was filled with the promise of a thousand lifetimes to me. I don't know what drew me to the sea in that way, but I had said to myself that when I got older, whatever I did, I had to go to sea in some way or another. Now, I didn't go in the Navy. Fate did not take me in the Navy. Perhaps that would have been another life and a great life unto itself. But as I say, so I went to the islands, I took these great pictures, and then as I had children and I still wanted to get out there and didn't have the money to do so, I marketed myself in the proper manner, went to the cruise lines, and I said, well, I could lecture your passengers on the islands and this and that, which was true, and I have great pictures and showed it to, boom, boom, boom. So I got the first class cabin, for the two of us and one for the kids. I took the kids out of school very often during vacations, and it was a question, should you take your kids out of school for a month at a time, and they'd fall behind in lessons. And I remember, I hope my son's not listening, and I would say, now look, son, I'm taking you out of school for a month. This is a great privilege to go on a ship. You're going to have to take your lessons with you. We're going to do the lessons on the ship, and you're going to keep a journal. Sure, Dad. Now, remember, because you have an opportunity to learn from far. Yeah, Dad, sure. Well, needless to say, 3 days out, the journal was still blank. The pages were blank, and the school books were sitting on the shelf, and the kids were wheeling around the deck of the ship, bothering all of the old people who hated children. They were the only children on the ship in some cases, because who else had a child on a ship in those days in the month of, let's say, October or November? Nobody. And so, therefore, we would be at sea. Now, where was I? Okay, so one of the ships that we got on was not a big ocean liner, a 35,000-ton, let's say, Royal Viking ship. They were magnificent. I remember once I got on a ship called, oh, I don't know what it was called, my God, but it was a small ship with a very small draft that could get into shallow waters like in the Antarctic because it was made for Antarctic cruising. Okay, so shallow bottom ship between Tahiti and Fiji, two cabins. It didn't have many passengers. It was a 5,000-ton ship. That's pretty small when the average cruise ship then was, a big ship was 35,000 tons. Today they're 100,000 tons, 100 and a quarter. They're monsters. They're hotels with propellers. For better or for worse, I don't particularly like that size ship for myself. If you do, God bless you. So I'm on a 5,000-ton boat, shallow keel, very shallow keel, and we leave Fiji, and we're supposed to be out there back and forth for about 20 days. You know, Fiji, island hopping to Tahiti, around a Christmas time, New Year's time. Well, we get into a hurricane. Now, you got a shallow bottom ship, 5,000 tons, and this ship is rolling. In the middle of the night, I hear a pounding. They put me as a lecturer in the front of the ship in the forward bow cabin, not exactly the best steel hull, and I'm hearing banging like someone's hitting the hull with a sledgehammer. So I wake up and I said, something is wrong. Why is this ship sounding like this? I get up, I go in the passageways, nobody is awake. But being a survival type, I knew something was wrong. I throw on a windbreak, I climb up to the bridge, and there is the German captain, who is normally as nattily dressed as you would expect of a sea captain. He is unshaven, he is in an undershirt, and his eyes are in a state of absolute, I don't know how to put it, they weren't in a state of panic, but they were locked. They were locked onto another place at another time. And he looks at me as though I'm not there. He looks right through me. His hands are locked on the wheel. And he's looking. I can't explain it. It wasn't a state of panic. I don't know how to describe it. I almost don't have the words for it, and I'm pretty good with words. But his eyes were looking somewhere away. Maybe you say like a soldier, where they say they have the 1,000-yard look. That's what he had. And he had gone a little nuts from the pressure. And he said to me, lecturer. He wasn't even calling me by the name anymore. Lecturer, all the time, Fiji, Tahiti, Tahiti, Fiji. Lecturer, Fiji, Tahiti, Tahiti, Fiji. Lecturer. You know, it's like he had gone nuts already. Anyway, the long and short of it was we went into a terrible, terrible gale. I don't know what they call it, a storm down there. It's not called a typhoon in that area, not a monsoon. Whatever it was very rough and very bad. And I feared the ship would go down. And I became kind of disenamored of taking my children on long trips on small ships after that, to be honest with you. So be that as it may, here I am in front of a microphone, nice and safe, landlocked, sitting in a dry place, watching the world go round. Now, where was I? Oh, so I was going to ask you, if you came from a family that took you away on long trips, did it affect you positively in the long run or negatively? Now, this is interesting because here's the interesting twist to this whole thing. It was actually a liberal thought in those days that if you took your child out of school for a long trip and they were exposed to the world, they would get more out of that long exposure than they would from sitting in a classroom. That was actually a liberal philosophy, which I went along with and ascribed to, and it turned out to be correct. So Brad in Melbourne, Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Great show.
Thank you. So were you a kid taken out of school?
I was. I grew up in rural South Carolina, probably went to one of the worst school districts in the South. And my parents fought with the school board, but took my sister and myself out of school every year from Thanksgiving through the second week in January. and took us to a different country around the world for those 6 weeks.
Hmm. Well, you're a lucky kid. So how did you end up at the end of the day? Do you think it helped you or harmed you?
Oh, it was tremendous education for me. I ended up going to an Ivy League school and graduating towards the top of the class. And, you know, we sat in the car with my parents, and my mom read to us the history of the countries we drive through.
Oh, well, see, there's what I'm talking about. She didn't just take you out and abandon you to the, let's say, the instincts of a child, which aren't often very noble, to say the least. Thanks for the call. I'm glad it worked out for you.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Dr. Savage, maybe you can help me. I haven't gone to the toilet very well in the last few weeks. You know, since Thanksgiving, I have a blockage. Can you give me some? Or I'm going to get another one. And there's something natural I could use because my wife and I are no longer doing the funny business together. And I don't want to use that stuff that makes your vision turn blue with mild blindness. I told you one of the side effects of Viagra is temporary blindness in some men. I jokingly said that that's part of the effect that's desired. That's why you can still do it with someone you live with for so many years. It makes you temporarily blind, and that's it. You put the blinders on instead of taking them off. Not so funny, the poor women, what they have to put up with. No wonder the men die first. After they put up with us for so long, they're supposed to get it all in the end. I don't know what they do with it, frankly. I don't know if they enjoy themselves. They seem to enjoy themselves, the older women. A, their sex drive has left them. They're not bothered with that. B, they could do without men. They found out that it was all a myth to begin with. They had the children already, the grandchildren. What do they need men for at a certain point? They got some money. They can travel. They can play pinochle. Or whatever. What do they do in the old age homes? I know I'm never going to wind up in a limited, in assisted living or old age. Never. I know I'm never going to be there. My mother wound up in an assisted living. I told you it was only about Italian or Chinese. That's all she would talk about. If I'd say, Mom, my latest book is a bestseller for the 15th week of the New York Times, she'd say, that's nice. You know, I had Italian last night. It wasn't so good. It wasn't as good as in New York. That's all. I get that repeatedly. Is it any wonder I'm slightly warped when it comes to certain issues in the world, particularly relationships of some kind? You can understand why. I mean, everyone has their thing. No one's perfect. I never alleged to be perfect. Let me tell you that. Oh, no. You never heard me say I'm Mr. Perfect, did you? So criticize all you want. I never said I was perfect. Maybe you think you're perfect. But I know I'm imperfect because I'm a conservative. Only liberals think that they can either that they are perfect or they can achieve perfection. Go take a look at most of their behaviors and their children. You'll see how perfect they are. No, I have figured out that if I should live long or longer, let's say, personally, I know you're not interested in this, but I may as well say it anyway. Tick-tock, 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 the sands of time, the hourglasses, you know, the sand. There's more sand now down on the bottom than there was on the top. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you take the hourglass of your life, if you're a certain age, there's more sand up above in that glass than there is down below. In my case, most of the sand already has gone down to the bottom glass. Let's put it to you that way. No matter what the end result may be, most of the sand is already down in the bottom glass. I'm starting to think about certain things I would ignore up until now. I'm immortal. I'm not going to. Because people say to me even today, well, what do you want to do at the end? I said, I'm never going to die. They think I'm crazy. I won't make such plans. I will not make such plans. I'm never going to die. I'm never going to get sick and old. How do you like that? In other words, say I'm foolish. Well, all right, call it what you want. I knew kids when I lived in Hawaii, mainly Japanese Americans, at 19 years old. They knew who they were going to marry. They knew where they were going to get married, how many children. They knew where they were going to be buried. At 19, they had it all worked out. There are societies that do that to this day. I don't understand that kind of living. I can't do that. I'd rather live in a sense of a man who's going to live to 1,000 years because I remember that character out of Zorba. You remember Kazantzakis' great, great character, Zorba the Greek? I love that character. Of course, it was a distortion. As it was played by Anthony Quinn, one of the great filmic characters was Zorba, as played by Quinn. But do you remember the scene where he's leaning against the window and he says to the woman, a man like me should live 1,000 years? What a great line that was. That's the way to go through life every day, by the way. I don't like men who at 50 say, well, at my age, or I'm 50 and I should think that at 50 already I got one foot in the grave. Why think that way? Why start taking that attitude? Because you're just going to speed up your own aging and die young anyway if you do that to yourself. That's all. Next case. Moving on. Oh, so I was saying, even if, let's say, I should become enfeebled by accident or by disease, I'm never going to go to an assisted living. I want to stay in the house, and I want to have care. That's all. I don't want no hospital. I don't want to be around a hospital. The other people smell. I depress you in those joints. There's no reason to be there. You get around-the-clock care if you can. That's all. I don't know if the family's going to go along with it, but that's what I'm going to do. I'll make sure that I, you know, put it away for that. What, do I want another car? I'd rather pay for care. I just got my Social Security form. Do you ever get one of those? I've been getting it for, like, years. It shows you what you earn going back to 1968. I couldn't believe it, how much they take from me. I could not believe how much they rob from me on the Medicare. Like 2.5% of my gross income to support bums, disgusting, filthy bums, while I'm still working? 2.5% of my gross is given for Medicare so illegal aliens can come here and have a heyow on my dime? I can't believe this government. It's thievery. Why am I paying 2.5% of my gross for Medicare so that a bunch of bums can take advantage of my work? Why am I working? I ask myself. 2.5% of my gross income goes to support bums, third worlders that don't belong here. They have a better medical system than my father ever had, and he worked here all of his life. All they got to do is swim across the Rio Grande and bingo. Gringo, they got a gold-plated, gold-plated medical care because of the gringo. I can't take it.
Savage.
Over the streets here. They came to San Francisco. Drive down Turk Street, you'll see where they are. Well, other than the hippies who became the supervisors, take a look at the streets of the city, what they do to the poor here. They make believe they care about the homeless. They don't care about the homeless. If they were truly humane, they would round up the homeless. They would give them the treatment that they need, which is a good bath, first of all. They'd burn their clothing. They would put them on Thorazine or whatever the current crop of chemicals is to stop the psychosis. They would feed them, and then they'd make them work for their living instead of sitting around and making movies about the homeless experience. But the phony liberal is the empty liberal. The empty liberal, they're full of rhetoric and hot air. They don't really care about the poor or the homeless. They use it as a fulcrum to get attention and to get ahead in society and make a living off them. You know, I drove last night down this Van Ness Avenue. If you're not from here, you don't know where it is. I've never seen more bums in my life, more than when I first got here in 1974, and dirtier and more wrecked than in 1974. And they're a product of the whole hippie come to San Francisco with a flower in your hair. But there are good things. There are hardworking people. There's great food. There's great food. I mean, from the I told you the fish piccata I had the other night in my friend's restaurant. I mean, great Italian food. And then I had a corned beef sandwich last night, which I have once a year. I was in like a depression after yesterday's show because of the terrible news and the disconnect between the ruling elite, so-called, and what's going on in the world. The New World Order, the managers of the New World Order scare me to death because of the movie The Skull and Bones, to realize how vacuous they probably are. The fact that dollars roll as the world's reserve currency is eroding because of the trade imbalance with China, and so that the oil-producing zillionaires are starting to hedge their bets against a further fall in the dollar, and they're demanding euros and British pounds instead. These are worrisome events. Don't you understand that? So I figured, since it all may come down faster than I think, and I won't die an old man in bed, I may as well have a corned beef sandwich. That's how I evaluated it. So I drove to the depths of a place I know on Van Ness. I never saw such bums in my life. You literally need a pair of galoshes to walk past the filth in the street, and be an armed guard to go in and out to go to your car. You take your life in your hands. This is not a city that I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. I don't get it. They could clean this up. They can get the bums off the street. Most tourists hate it. But you talk about hippies, you know. The ultimate hippie is a dog. A dog is it lives like a hippie when you think about it. That's why we love dogs. It's the hippie within all of us. The difference, though, is that a dog doesn't vote in Nancy Pelosi.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Why would a newspaper man call those who cut people's heads off and kill our troops insurgents, rebels, instead of terrorists? Why? Now, you have to go back 30 years to understand how perverted and twisted they are. Years ago, there was a movement in this country to change the way we looked at deviants. And as a result, they have blurred moral boundaries. They promoted social disintegration. And as a result of the agitation of these 30 years, as Daniel Patrick Moynihan once wrote, deviance has been defined down. So, for example, years ago, we understood what a bum was. We knew what a junkie was. We knew what a pervert was. We knew what a suicidal maniac was, right? And most of us still do. But guys like those who published the Chronicle could still call guys who cut people's heads off and kill our boys insurgents. Because they don't call junkies junkies. They call them injection drug users. They don't call promiscuous teenagers sluts. They call them acting out their sexual imperative, for example. They don't call them homeless bums who need to be institutionalized. They call them rebels. They call them sort of Walt Whitman-esque-like rebels, rebelling against a oppressive society. And so what they do is they try to turn everything that's deviant into the norm and everyone who is normal into the deviant. And so they're insane. That's why I say liberalism is a mental disorder. And if you're going to let those in the asylum dictate to you what you should be thinking, you're going to wind up crazy. So what have they done? They've taken deviance and eliminated the concept completely. So, for example, they've diffused your strong sanctions against pedophilia. They call it part of a normal erotic continuum, pedophilia. Anyone who took their own life was considered a suicidal person, and you would try to stop them in the past for their own good. There's no greater thing but to keep a person from killing them. They jump off a bridge, you save them. That's why people jump in the water to save others. The mentally whacked out liberals of this country have now twisted assisted suicide, which is a very stigmatized behavior, suicide, into just another treatment that should be available to a patient. Everyone has become a client, and so they have transformed your ideas about what you should and what you should not tolerate. You should tolerate all of these deviances and never call them a deviance, but you must never tolerate religious dogma. That's the one thing you must never tolerate. And so, consequently, they've broken down the moral boundaries. They have romanticized the insane, and they've created a state of social disintegration in this country, is what they have done. Without social norms, there can be no society whatsoever. There was a wonderful book written on this subject that you probably never heard of. It was an academic book called The Politics of Deviance by Ann Hendershot, written in 2002. It came and went. No one ever heard of it, but it's a brilliant book. There's some great things out there. Really brilliant people understand what's going on. And my job is to teach it to you every day in an entertaining format, and I try to do that for you. So just be aware of the fact that your tolerance is actually a reflection of your loss of clarity Your tolerance for virtually anything and your anything go attitude is not a mark of liberalism. It's a mark of the degeneration of your ability to judge anything. And yet you maintain your right to judge Christians, don't you? You'll judge Christians, but you won't judge Muslims. You'll judge America's troops, but you won't judge the throat cutters. You'll judge George Bush, but you won't judge Bill Clinton for what he did when he dropped bombs on the Serbian people. So you're really warped. You're just a warped, biased personality who pretends that you're an enlightened, advanced, futuristic human being. But you're not. And now most of America has awakened to the fact that, A, they're not alone, and, B, that they actually have the power. And you're now in the minority, those of you on the other side. You're on the dark side of reality. And we are going to try and save this country, period, end of story. Don't you understand it's really a battle? And who started it? We didn't start it. In fact, you probably grew up in the same world we grew up in. But because you were so quick, you on the other side of this culture war, to embrace the concepts of radicalism, you think that you have discovered something new and you feel you've broken the chains of oppression. When in fact, I can hear your chains rattling. The more you scream that you have broken the chains of oppression, the louder I hear your chains rattling. You are nothing but a monkey in a cage. And the more you scream about racism and homophobia and sexism and thisism and thatism and bigotry, the more I know you are nothing but a monkey in a cage and your chains are rattling. And let me tell you something, I'd like to free you. I really would like to unlock that chain around your leg and get that ball and chain off your foot, because you are a prisoner. And I don't even blame you. You're a product of our society. You've been brainwashed since childhood from television shows like that on KQED and PBS. I never let my children watch Big Bird. Never. I turned the show off. I knew it was a propaganda tool. And it was. And so forth and so on. You get the picture, fill in the blanks yourself. Take the pen and follow it through. Be a John Nagy. Fill in the picture. We're facing an enemy worse than Hitler. Worse than Hitler. Why do I say worse than Hitler? Because Hitler was unabashedly evil. Everyone knew that. Everyone could see that. It was no ambivalence about Hitler and the Nazis. Everyone in America understood he was our enemy. But now we're facing an enemy that's far worse than Hitler. Radical Islamists who have wrapped themselves in a religion and stolen a religion. And because of that, all of you bigoted leftists who have no qualms about attacking Christians won't say boo about the radical Islamists. Guys like Phil Bronstein in the Chronicle, I have no idea why he's still there, a failing newspaper that's in the toilet. The circulation goes down and down, and they keep a guy like that there. Not a positive word about what went on in Iraq. Not a salute to the troops. Not an attack upon these vile enemies of freedom and of everything that we believe in. How did this happen to a man? I'm sure he was a good man, raised probably in the same kind of family I was raised in. How does a man raised in the same background wind up like this? I will tell you how, and how millions of other decent people wind up in that time warp of unreality called liberalism. That is, they live in a cocoon where their ideas and only their ideas and that of their close circle are expressed. They never, ever meet anyone outside their small circle of liberalism, of liberals. They agree with each other. It's a small, closed circuit. And therefore, if they go to a dinner party at a fancy person's home, they express enlightened ideas. They know there's global warming, even though the scientific community is out on that. If ever there is a dissident opinion raised at one of these dinner parties, which is very rare, because no one is permitted into these cloistered environments unless they've been pre-approved, and unless the gatekeepers have approved of them and given them entrance to their fancy little parties of stupidity, why, that person is laughed at as a sort of eccentric, to be accepted sort of as an eccentric who's a fool of the other side. A throwback to, let's say, more primitive times in America. And so they live in their own world. The newspapers fail. The circulation keeps going down. And they don't even understand that they're going out of business because there are no consequences. There are no consequences because there's no ownership. If there was still a person who owned the newspaper, they'd fire the hack and say, damn it, my circulation's dying. I want a report on my desk by Friday on why the people aren't buying your paper. And then by next Friday, I want a report on my desk of how to make them buy the paper. I give that report in the next 5 seconds. stop publishing anti-family, anti-Christian, anti-American, anti-military, anti-police stories in your damn newspaper. Start publishing stories that support those things, and your sales will go up. They know that, though. And we say, well, ipso facto, if they know that, why don't they publish those stories? The answer is because they don't want to, because then they won't be invited to these silly soirees. They won't be invited to the silly soirees if they start publishing things like that. So in other words, these newspapers, these anachronisms called newspapers, are simply social commentary for those who own them. It's their way of saying, here's what I believe in, through the factotums called writers, whoever writes for them. How do you explain talk radio in general being a boom industry? How do you explain a show like mine, a one-man band? Yeah, I have people who work with me. They're wonderful people. But it's all about me 3 hours a day. How do you explain this phenomenon? In a city like San Francisco, as radically twisted to the left as it is, I will tell you there's an underserved population in this city, for example. I meet them every day. I walk the streets and people come out of cafes and restaurants, older people generally, but not only older people. And they look at me with hope and they say, Michael Savage, I love what you say. I only wish that we heard it more. Over and over and over again, I hear it wherever I go. And I hear it at first here, and then I hear it there, and then it becomes a roar. And one day it's going to become more than a roar. One day this will become the dominant viewpoint in America again. Only it's got to become that sooner rather than later if we are to defeat the enemy. What enemy am I talking about? Radical Islam is the enemy external, and the enemy internal is the ACLU, the National Lawyers Guild, and the entire pack of anti-family, anti-Christian, anti-American deviants. Those are your enemies. They're trying to destroy your country.
Yeah.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I woke up last night at about 4 a.m. I couldn't sleep. I heard a rumbling in the sky, and I know what that low rumbling in the sky means. I know that the gigantic bombers are on the move. They're coming out of the Air Force Base near Sacramento. I didn't have to read about it in the paper today. I just know they're moving them. I don't know where they're moving them. I don't know how many were being moved, but I heard the low rumble in the sky at 4 a.m. And I said, thank God something's going on behind the scenes because this is getting out of control. You've got a psychopath threatening New York and Washington, D.C. You've got an invisible president. You've got a quavering Secretary of Defense. You've got a Secretary of State that went over to the Palestinian side, meaning the PLO side. It's astonishing to me what a group of hollow men we have running this country. And then I couldn't sleep. I couldn't get back to sleep after I heard that low rumble because things are very terrifying right now if you really listen carefully. You don't have to put your ear to the ground to know what's going on in this world. All you got to do is take your blinders off and stop watching baseball and get your eyes off YouTube and get your eyes off pornography and get your eyes off, you know, the latest lingerie on YouTube. Stop listening to Moloch's madnesses and start looking at what's going on in your world. And I sat down and I wrote this. Take it for what it is. I wrote this down. I said, I met with my kitchen cabinet last night while cooking a light dinner. As I drank the Bordeaux, I consulted with my chief advisor, Teddy, a 10-pound gray poodle. In my kitchen cabinet with us were Plato, Moses, Jesus, John Locke, George Washington, Lincoln, Patton, and God. Here's what my kitchen cabinet recommended for rescuing America. I wrote out a 4-page plan. You think I'm just a funny guy, huh? Let's start with my plan for rescuing America. Page 1, domestic, A. Cut federal income taxes by 2% per year over 4 years for a minimum total of 8% over 4 years. B, reduce federal government departments in size by 4% each year for a total reduction of size by 16% over 4 years. C, eliminate all public assistance for able-bodied recipients, cut off all public assistance for immigrants for 5 years, repatriate those who are not working after 2 years. D, immediately impose tariffs on cars and trucks owned by foreign entities, even if they're manufactured in America. E, cause illegal aliens to build a wall between the United States and Mexico, and then repatriate them. Pay them a one-time worker fee. F, increase pay for active duty combat troops by 10%. Number two, fire any unmarried military person becoming pregnant while on active duty. Shall I continue? I will, whether you want me to or not. Here's the rest of my domestic policy for saving or rescuing America. G, make abortions illegal except when the physical survival of the mother is threatened, to be determined by three medical doctors. Number two in that category, require Norplant for all women on welfare of childbearing age. H, close all houses of sex and massage. I, expand the DEA while decriminalizing most drugs. J, regarding the media. 1, eliminate all foreign ownership of any American media entity. 2, break up overly large conglomerates like News Corporation. K, encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens. Create a marriage incentive through lower taxes for married heterosexual couples and a government subsidy for each child conceived and carried to birth. Increase the subsidies for each year the couple remains married. L, repatriate all illegal immigrants now incarcerated. Encourage all other illegals to self-repatriate through double taxation on wages and fines on employers. This is Michael Savage. I'll go on with my international program for rescuing America. I'm sure that most of you would turn the program off. You'd rather listen to the hollow men in the media. Go ahead and listen. I don't care anymore. We've got a hollow, empty suit running the country. We've got a hollow, empty skirt wanting to run the country. And the only people who can save this country have been silenced by the media bosses. So I'll go on with my international plan for rescuing this great nation. International, A, Iraq. It'll be Iraq, Iran, North Korea, Israel, China, the United Nations. Here it comes, A, Iraq. 1, cordon off the Sunni triangle. Send in Iraqi troops to mop up pockets of resistance. Emphasis, Iraqi troops to mop up pockets of resistance. 2, divide Iraq into 3 to 4 sectors, Sunni, Shiite, Kurd, and international. Next, remove all U.S. troops after above achieved. B, Iran. 1, sanctions, embargoes, and mine their harbors. Nothing goes in, nothing comes out. C, North Korea. Destroy their launching platforms, impose a naval blockade on all goods coming in or out except food. D, Israel, Arab entities. Give Israel 4 years to become self-sufficient. Cut off all foreign aid to all nations. E, China, 20% tariffs on all China-made goods immediately, rising by 5% each year for each year China refuses to revalue the currency. I'm Michael Savage. I approve of this message.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.
Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
When I grew up, there were old men around. There were old men, middle-aged men, young men. Today, that's everyone tries to look alike. With Viagra and hair transplants, it's like one continuum from age 15 till death. Everyone has dark hair, false teeth, and are sexually, they can be sexually aroused till they go into the coffin. Like a 60-year-old today is like a 40-year-old then, right? And in those days, they died young at 50, 55, a lot of them. It was like 75, 78. Well, they ate like, they didn't know what they were doing. You ever take a look at their diets? Smoked all day, didn't exercise, didn't take a vitamin, no diet. Never heard of a garlic. They drank the wrong alcohol. You know, so, you know, you can kill any good genetic inheritance with that kind of situation. You could see I'm already, you know what I really want to do is have fun. I am having fun. Maybe it's too much fun. Maybe you want me to just do pure, you know, stuff for you. I don't know. I'm not in the mood. I have a friend I heard that I know from 30 years ago, listens to the show avidly in New York. Now, I haven't spoken to him in 20 years, but I heard he listens. And he actually knows that I really, when I told the story of the midget in the seedy hotel in Florida from 25 years ago, there really was a midget, and he really did rob all of my money and his money, and we had to call the police, and the police were in on the take. Remember that story? AC, if you're listening to this show, would you call and confirm that there was a midget in that Fleabag hotel in Miami back in the 60s? It really did exist. I was a naive kid from New York. We took the Greyhound bus down to Florida. We couldn't even afford a $69 air ticket. So it was like intercession, and we took the – what bus was it? Greyhound, probably. Greyhound bus to Florida. I remember to this day it went on – it was like a midnight cowboy. Right? It was like midnight cowboy. I mean, you know, like through Atlanta, there were like chicken bones in the aisle already. People were throwing food on it. You know, like eating chicken and throwing it on the floor. It got so filthy. Who would use a – you know, you really have to be a hero to use a Greyhound toilet. I would never. I'd rather bust inside than. Imagine going into a bus toilet in this day and age. Imagine what kind of needles are in there or whatever. I never, even as a kid, I wouldn't use a bus toilet. My God, the thought of it. The driver was like, he was telling you there's a restroom in the back of the bus? Forget about it. It's like apartheid, man. Take that bus. It was the best fried chicken I ever tasted in my life was, you know, what do I know? Everything with me is food. So I came from New York, and my mother would try to make fried chicken. It was okay, but I didn't like the oil. It didn't taste good. So I figured I'm in Atlanta at the bus stop. I'll try in the cafeteria, the Greyhound cafeteria in Atlanta. Now I'm going to try the cuisine of the South in this place. What did I know? I was a kid from New York. I had no idea. I figured, all right, I'm in the South. I'm going to try Southern fried chicken. Where am I going to try it? The Greyhound bus terminal. It was excellent. It was unbelievable. Those days, there was no KFC. They do a pretty good job, KFC. I've told you that. I haven't eaten it for a while. I got to try it again. I need to, like a hand. Maybe that's why I have a skin condition, not enough grease. You know, I bet you I cut down on the fats too much. My skin became tight. Maybe if I had a high-fat diet. You know what? What if I went to a high-cholesterol diet for a few days? I guarantee, no, I went and got the fish oil today. The Norwegian, the nitrogen-infused $18 variety of cod liver oils from special hippie fish from Norway. Fish that are, they're all socialists. They're not racist. They're not homophobic fish. They danced in certain aquariums, and then they were harvested peacefully in their old age. And their livers were extracted gently by Dr. Death from his jail cell and infused with nitrogen. I actually feel better from it, the fish liver oil. But I don't like it. I grew up on it. Thank God I had fish liver oil as a child. I got to tell you the truth. With the diet I ate, what she put into my mouth, you know how they force feed a goose to make pate? I was close to second in a human form. Well, because they came from poverty in the old world, so they had a little money. The first thing they did was feed you. They didn't intend to give you a heart attack at 12. But it was a cardiotoxic diet. There's no question about it. Ham and eggs for breakfast, meatloaf, a light lunch, meatloaf from the night before. And at night, you had a steak or pot roast polished off with an ice cream. Now, if you do that to an average human being today, they're dead in 3 years. Let's say you wanted to take Al-Qaeda members and you say, well, here's your choice. We're either going to keep you in prison indefinitely with no charges for another 10 years, or we can subject you to Michael Savage's childhood diet for 3 months. And if you don't get a heart attack, you're free. You know what I'm saying? It's a choice. Now, the reason I think I'm still alive is twofold. A, I inherited on the female, the maternal side of the genetics. And B was the cod liver oil. Because despite the cardiotoxic diet, she gave me cod liver oil. She made me take drops. It was like in a dropper bottle in orange juice. I hated it. I hated the taste of it. It was so disgusting. To this day, it was like remembrances of disgusting things past. It was like Proust in the negative. Drip, drip, take it, it's good for you. I hated it. Take it or I'll kill you. And the scissors came out, or the big knife from the drawer. The soprano scissors were looked at. Her eyes crossed, and I knew I better take that orange juice with the it was less than getting a good wallop, you know, if I didn't take the juice. It was like the Kool-Aid. You look back on these things. It's lucky I didn't wind up in Guyana with Jim Jones. You know, take my Kool-Aid, man. Here's the drops in the Jello. You know, what am I talking about? Do some of you, are you able to follow free association when I get into the jazz thing of the show, or should I stop it? Would you like two dimensions, one dimension, or seven dimensions? You got to tell me what you want me to do here. On the line is a guy I have not spoken to in 10, 15 years, but he knows that the one-eyed midget from Miami story is 100% true. AC, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael.
I don't believe it. It's you. It really is you. I cannot believe it. I heard the other day that you are a listener.
A guy called me. He says, you better call your buddy Mike Savage. He says you should call him. Some bartender called me, the very same guy from 6-7 months ago. Mike, the big question is, do you remember how much money you put in the safe in Florida?
No. How much did I? Was it? Wait, I'm going to guess. In those days, $35, my entire life savings.
Bingo.
No. I made. Are you serious? Was it $35?
We put in the money in the morning. We came back 6 o'clock. He didn't know what you were talking about.
Was it not a midget in a shredded midget suit, like a bellhop?
23rd and Collins, man.
23rd and Collins. So is that South Beach today, Arnie?
Well, you know, South Beach, they want to say, is below 21st Street. So it's not officially South Beach, but it's South Miami.
Okay, but did you have bed bugs in your bed?
Of course.
I woke up in the morning, I thought I was hallucinating. There were bed bugs in the hotel. Now, today, I'll bet you that property's worth a pretty penny, no doubt.
But, Mike, you don't remember. You went crazy with the guy. All of a sudden, he immediately found it, or he forgot. He found it.
Wait a minute. Let's slow down. We put the money in, all our money, in the safety deposit box in this flea-bag hotel. We come back. I don't know about no money. I went crazy. Didn't we call for the police?
We threatened to call for the police. The midget eyes started rolling around in his head, the one eye. And all of a sudden, he remembered it was in the back safe.
Oh, I pulled a loud yelling scene in the lobby, right?
Went nuts.
I gave him the command voice and the insanity, and the midget suddenly saw reality. He vaguely remembered the money. Oh, I switched to the other box or something, right? That's right. It reappeared before the police arrived.
He appeared. All of a sudden, he apologized profusely. What can I say? It was incredible. It was
See, but people think I made up the midget in the Miami hotel story. What else? Now, is it not true, and I won't get too personal, didn't you have an uncle who owned a hotel down there, a rich guy?
You got some memory.
Wait, yes or no? Didn't he own a hotel?
Mickey Hayes,
But didn't he also have a slight habit of stealing the sugar out of other hotels? I remember he owned a hotel worth millions in those days, even in those days millions, which could be, you know, God knows what today. But he had a habit, the sugar and the butter he took from other hotels.
And the plastic spoons.
That's right. You never knew when you might need them because he could be thrown out of Florida any minute. So without getting into detail, I hear you're happily remarried and everything now. I won't get into details.
Michael, I have been wanting to call you for the longest time. I just never, I don't know what to say, but now I get phone calls, call you
up. Now the next time you're on the West Coast, it's dinner on me. We're going to have a good laugh. Because as I get older, I realize, I mean, time, tick-tock. You know, you can't invent old friends, my friend AC.
And you know this, you know, are we on the radio now? Because I don't even know, but
I hope so. If we're not, I'm out of business.
Let me tell you this. There's one thing. I mean, I go over my Michael, the times we had together. Why can't I get Hakka cuisine here on the East Coast?
Isn't that amazing? From the years you lived in San Francisco?
You took me on Broadway to the Hakka cuisine. There was all.
Oh, yeah. No, you cannot get Hakka in New York with that Chinese community. You never heard of a Hakka?
All I know is you turned me on to the greatest Chinese food in the world, Hakka.
Well, San Francisco has the best Chinese food in the world. There's no question about it. And Hakka cuisine is at the top of the list. It's in the clay pots and this and that. You know, before you go, I remember one of the best memories of my life in San Francisco was when you lived here before the horrible, and I can't bring it up, let's forget it with the taxi thing, right?
Michael, there's not enough time that we have now. You're on your show.
But
around.
But I was there for you, wasn't I? Was I not there for you?
You showed up to see that I was still alive. I had the apartment on 17th Avenue. I couldn't even go to the bathroom. My hands were all in casts.
Oh, I'd like to. Let's not go into that person. I'm sure he's a board of supervisor today. Do you remember the dinner your former paramour threw in that wonderful apartment? A long Sicilian dinner she had. Remember, she was from Sicily, right? A lovely girl. And she did an Italian meal. Remember I asked for like a Godfather meal and she did it? with like 20 people at a long table. Remember that meal?
Fabulous.
See that? I remember all the good stuff. It's all simple things, AC. Let me tell you.
There's so much, and they asked me what music I wanted to play, and I was all of a sudden I nutted up. You don't play any Latin music for them on the air, do you? They wouldn't understand.
Oh, yes, I do. Once in a while from the private collection. Our old friend Artie sends me CDs I play. Play Para Vivir while AC is on. Let's see if it makes him go. It means to life, and to you I say to life. God bless you. Thank God you're still with us on this planet.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
The issue of patriotism has become front and center again in this election, as it should, because Obama's patriotism is questionable for a number of reasons. He didn't wear a flag pin. He's hung around with very, very anti-American people. His pastor hated America. Which we're not making up. You can listen to the speech yourself. I mean, I don't want to play it for effect. I can do that at any time, and I will. Actually, no, not right now. I'm not in the mood to listen to that harangue. So, no, his patriotism should be questioned, but not McCain's. This man is beyond reproach in one area. McCain is terrible when it comes to illegal immigration. McCain is terrible when it comes to so many issues. But on one issue, the guy is rock solid. He's as good as gold, and that is patriotism. For them to go after him on the one issue that he's strong shows a terrible lack of judgment on the part of the Obama campaign. But I wouldn't expect anything more from former SDS members, Students for a Democrat Society, hardcore Marxists. That's who's behind Obama. You read the pack of them. Their curriculum vitaes are Students for a Democrat Society. These are hardcore Marxists in their youth. God knows what they really still contain in their heads today. But you don't have to go any further than his preacher, which is contemporary. You don't have to go any further than William Ayers, which is a contemporary situation, not something in the fossilized past. I mean, you can forgive anyone their youthful indiscretions. Me, you, anybody. You don't have to carry that around in a person's life. People change. I've changed. You've changed. You grow up and you start seeing things differently. And so, no, you don't have to carry that around forever. I mean, Robert Byrd was once a Ku Klux Klan member. Wore a sheet doesn't mean you consider him a Ku Klux Klan member today. Jesse Jackson spit in the salads of white people. We know that he's probably changed his opinions today since he lives off the largesse of corporations that he intimidates, in my opinion. So people can change. Al Sharpton was a bullhorn outside Freddie's Fashion Mart, is now a very, very respected civil rights leader. Just look at Fox News tripping over themselves with the reverends. He's the most reverend. He's more reverend than anybody. He's the irreverent reverend. He's the most reverent reverend. So people can leave their past behind them, even if it consisted of egging people on to murder. But in the case of Obama, we're not talking about his past. We're talking about his present loyalties and where they lie. Why do I say that? Again, his preacher. His preacher is an important part of this man. You don't go sit in a church for 20 years that hates America and attacks America and say that it has nothing to do with you. If you don't like the rhetoric, you walked out. I don't know how many houses of worship I tried in my life that I walked out of. I walked out of them sometimes because I was bored, sometimes because I thought their politics were too far to the left. I've walked out of many houses of worship. In fact, I never found one I liked. And yet I'm a man who believes in God. Why? Who am I not to believe in God? Who am I to say I don't believe in God? What do you think, I'm bigger than God? I created myself, as the man once said to me. Follow your logic in your own head. As the homeless man once said to me, remember that story I told you? I was once... More so then than now. I don't do it anymore. I was into talking to strangers. I was into like the wandering man who would talk to weird people, figuring they held the truth, some truth when I was younger, you know. Well, now I hold my own truths. I don't need to talk to strangers for my own opinions. I can come up with my own. But when I was younger, I talked to a lot of odd people. One of them was a itinerant man. You'd call him a bum, but he wasn't really, because he wasn't really dirty. He wasn't disheveled. He didn't look like a homeless man, but he was. He had a backpack. He had long white hair. He wasn't particularly clean. He wasn't particularly dirty, but he was not an alcoholic or a drunk. So I talked to him about this and that, and I forget his name. Oh, his name was I remember it right now. His name was the same as Moses. His name was Moses or something to that effect. So I said to him, do you believe in God? I remember to this day, it was on Columbus Avenue in San Francisco. And I looked at him, and he had startling blue eyes. And he looked at me, and he said, as though in astonishment, he said, why, who created you? And in that instant, I had a satori. I understood more completely than I ever have through any preacher or rabbi what it was all about. Follow it back. Do you believe in God? I say to the itinerant man. He says, stunned. Why, who created you? I got it in that flash. Flash of understanding, the satori the Japanese talk about. Follow it back. So you're an atheist and you say, well, how do you know there's a God? So what is there? There's nothing? So nothing created you? So you believe in nothing, therefore you believe in something, but that's nothing. You believe in nothingness. I believe in God. That's all. How can you believe in nothingness? How is it possible to believe in nothingness? How can something come from nothing? It's a violation of all the laws of physics. Something cannot come from nothing. It violates all the laws of physics, physical science, biological science, theological science. It violates all the laws of reason. It violates all the laws of non-reason. So what I'm getting at is I learned from that man. So then I said, can I drop you off where you're going? He got in my Volkswagen at the time. And I drove him to a freeway overpass that no longer exists. Yeah, it was a 280 freeway somewhere near the Mission District. And the man got out and he said goodbye and he disappeared. I never saw him again. Who was he? Was he a prophet? Was he a reincarnation of a religious figure? Was he reincarnated? I don't know what he was. Maybe he was just a smart guy who was a bum. A lot of bums are smart. And a lot of corporate guys are not that smart. They play people for fools. They think that everybody is a fool because they control the money. What they don't understand is that there are values beyond money. They've never learned that. And unfortunately, our government is exactly the same. It's MBA all the way. MBA all the way right up into the military hierarchy. They think that an MBA makes them a war hero. An MBA makes them a war hero and a sage. But they'd sell their country out for a pound of flesh. And they'd sell their country out for less than 30 pieces of silver. They would teach their children Chinese and move to Shanghai if they had a better offer. Not me, buddy. This is the Savage Nation.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.